Welcome to Face to Face. Face to Face is an in-depth look at the life and career of a popular sports figure from a Christian perspective. Now, here's your host of Face to Face, Tom Rust.
All right, thank you, and welcome to Face to Face. We're glad to have you with us again this week. And hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe and maybe getting out a little bit more. Things are starting to open up. I'm not sure where you are in the country, but things are starting to open up a little bit more. And hopefully sometime in the future, we'll be able to get out and do some more face-to-face interviews. But we're still doing some archives. We're still pulling some face-to-face interviews from the past. And we have with us today Ed Schilling. And Ed, this is an interview that we did a couple of years ago when Ed was the assistant coach for Indiana University men's basketball. He has since moved on. He's left the IU program, and he is now at Grand Canyon University in Phoenix, Arizona. That's a smaller school, and yet it's a smaller school, and I believe it's NAIA, and they have done pretty well. Dan Marley was the coach out there, who was a former pro player, and now the coach out there is Bryce Drew. He is the brother of Scott Drew, the head coach at Baylor University, and Bryce was at Vanderbilt. He had a really tough last couple of years down at Vanderbilt, and he has landed at Grand Canyon University out in Phoenix, and his assistant coach is Ed Schilling. Ed has really been around. In fact, Ed is one of those guys that knows his basketball, has not been a head coach in a lot of places. He's mostly been with John Calipari, who is the head coach at the University of Kentucky. In fact, with John Calipari, and you'll hear this in the interview, Ed became the only player to coach a high school team, be on a Division I college team, and be in the NBA in the same year. Now, that's really unusual. But that's kind of Ed Schilling. He's also been the head coach at Park Tudor High School in Indianapolis, where he did very well, and University of Memphis. He's been around. But we wanted to do a show with Ed Schilling today because we've had this interview in our archives, and this past week, Ed lost his father, Ed Schilling Sr., who was also an outstanding coach and an outstanding player. And after you hear the interview with Ed Schilling Jr., we'll tell you a little bit more about his dad. So we'll take a break, and when we come back, you'll hear the interview that we did with Ed Schilling Jr., now the assistant coach at Grand Canyon University in Phoenix, Arizona. We will take a break and be back. You are listening to Face to Face. All right, welcome back to Face to Face. Our guest is Ed Schilling, the new assistant basketball coach under new head coach Archie Miller, and a longtime friend, going back a number of ways. You're coming from UCLA, where you were assistant under Steve Alford. You had a tremendous season. What brings you back to Indiana?
I'm back because, one, I feel like it's a great situation, but also my family is here, wife's family's here, and so this is really home. As much as I love 70 and sunny every day in L.A., Indiana's home, and to be able to come back and not only come back but be part of Indiana University men's basketball is just a tremendous blessing, and so we are so excited to be here.
You're an Indiana guy, of course. From Lebanon High School in Lebanon, Indiana, and you've been around a number of places. Has it kind of always been a dream, maybe in the back, to be a part of the Indiana University system?
I don't know about it being a dream, but I know growing up, you know, I watched all the Indiana games on TV, and even as far as watching the Bob Knight show, you know, on the when that was on, and so I've been around. I've watched it. I even played against Indiana a couple times when I was playing at Miami University, and so I've always held it in super high regard. I don't know that it's been a dream, but it's certainly a blessing.
Tell me about the magic of UCLA. I know that there's the climate there, as you said. There's Pauley Pavilion. There's the mystique of just UCLA as being an outstanding university and certainly an outstanding program that John Wooden put together. Did you feel that when you were out there?
Definitely. I mean, there was a certain expectation of excellence that I believe John Wooden was, key in starting with, obviously, all the championships. But there's well over 100 national champions in all the different sports combined. So there's an expectation of excellence academically, athletically, and there is certainly that. And, with that comes pressure, comes a lot of things, but, it was a great place. It was, John Wooden was famous for the quote, "Every day is a great day at UCLA." When you get up and almost every single day it's sunny and 70 degrees, he kind of puts you in a good mood. But, we know that there's challenges everywhere. And, though what may look easy and smooth sailing, on the outside, as you know, no matter where you go, there's going to be challenges, and UCLA is no different, but it is certainly a wonderful place to be.
There was certainly an Indiana influence when you were there. Of course, Steve Alford, the head coach from Newcastle, you're from Lebanon. John Wooden himself came from Martinsville. Does the Indiana flavor kind of carry over there? Is Indiana style of basketball? I mean, Indiana is the heartland of basketball. Is there kind of a carryover there to some Indiana influence all the way through?
Well, there is a little bit. We not only had Coach Alford and myself, but also Corey Barnett, who was our video coordinator at the time, now our basketball operations. He was also not only from Indiana, but he played at Indiana, was a walk-on and then a basketball operations person here at Indiana. So we had three Hoosiers, so to speak, on the staff at UCLA. And I just know growing up, if there was a coach outside of my father that I looked to, it was John Wooden, and had the opportunity to meet him a few times and spend some time in his living room for about 4 hours one afternoon. So he was probably shaped coaching philosophy as much as anybody. And so to coach there was an amazing thing.
Are there a little more distractions at UCLA? I mean, you've got the media, you've got the Hollywood influence, you've got just a number of different things. It almost seems to be a lightning rod in many ways for a lot of things going on. Was it more hard than, say, at some of the other places that you've been?
Yes and no. I mean, there's so many things going around, but that traffic will keep you grounded right where you are, because you don't want to get stuck in it. You do have a lot of different options. So many great churches all around. There's a lot of events, a lot of things going on, a lot of sporting activities, things like that out there. But, you kind of get locked in where you are, because you can go to those things, but you may be stuck in traffic for 3 or 4 hours. So, though there's distractions, they kind of keep you hemmed in.
You've really been around. You graduated from Lebanon High School, I believe, and
yes.
You were a coach at Western Boone. You were a coach at Logansport. Then you ended up at UMass with John Calipari, and from that you went to the New Jersey Nets. In fact, you're kind of the answer to a trivia question. 310 days you went from a high school coaching job to college and on to the NBA. Let's back up a little bit. How did you get hooked up with John Calipari at UMass?
Well, we worked together. I actually played for him when he was just kind of a basketball operation, our grad assistant at Kansas. I played for him at Five Star Camp, and then we worked the Five Star Camp together. That was back in the day when Howard Garfinkel's camp was the place to be, kind of before the AAU and all that stuff. And so we got a chance to develop our a friendship there. And so out of that friendship, when he got started at UMass, he came through Indiana several times recruiting, and our friendship through Five Star remained intact. And then when he had some movement on his staff, he called, and without an interview or anything else, the next thing you know, I was headed to Amherst, Massachusetts.
John Calipari, a very unique individual. Ed Schilling is our guest. We're talking Indiana basketball here. He's the assistant coach, but we're also talking about the fact that you were with John in a couple of different venues, and I just saw the 30 for 30 piece on John Calipari. You might be in there somewhere in the background.
Yeah.
When he went to UMass, it was absolutely nothing. And when he finished up at UMass, they were on the national scene. What is the uniqueness of John Calipari? Wherever he has gone, he has been a winner. What makes John Calipari such a unique individual, since a unique coach?
More than anything, I think it's his, just his charisma. He just has a certain way about him that people want to be around him. And he has an incredible ability to make everybody feel like he's one of them. He can be in a boardroom with multimillionaires and they feel like he's one of them. He can be in a house in a home visit on with a dirt floor in the house and they feel like he's one of them. Black, white, doesn't matter. He has the ability to connect with every range of people. And so I think that's the first thing. And then I believe on the court, he has an ability, because of his personality and his relationships that he builds, to be able to get the most out of his players. He gets them to play incredibly hard. And I think it stems from his initial ability to connect with them. They know that he cares about them. They also know he's a little bit crazy. And so he can go nuts if he needs to, or if he does. But at the end of the day, they know that he cares about them, and I think that's really what makes him so special.
You were with him also at the New Jersey Nets, and according to the documentary, that was kind of a tough time because it was different with a different style of player with a lot of money. And what about your experience with the New Jersey Nets? What did you come away with that feeling?
One, I think that the one thing the 30 for 30 kind of missed was the fact that he took one of the worst organizations at the time and in a few years got him into the playoffs and actually won a game in the playoffs against the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan in their heyday. And so, you know, he really did a much better job coaching in the NBA than people give him credit for. For me personally, I really enjoyed the opportunity. It gave me a chance to work with the highest level athlete, and to be able to work with someone for 20 minutes and then they can go out and actually execute it in the game was just something that is really unique. You can work with a high school kid for months and months and they can't do it in the game just because of their skill, their ability, talent level. The NBA, you work with such a high level of talent that being able to work with them and then be able to see them implemented immediately was something that was unique about it, but something I really enjoyed.
Ed Schilling is our guest. He's the new assistant head coach under Archie Miller at Indiana University. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more. So don't go away. You're listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Our guest is Ed Schilling, the assistant coach. And Ed, for the most part, you have been an assistant coach. You were a head coach at Wright State for a number of years and certainly had some good times there, including one incredible game where you knocked off number 6 Michigan State. There's a difference between being a head coach and being an assistant coach. And your skill, your strength seems to be taking players and developing them wherever you've been, whether it's been in the NBA, whether it's been in high school, whether it's been at the University of Memphis. Was it a different style for you to be a head coach, or would you aspire to go back to being a head coach someday?
Well, I love being a head coach, and in a lot of regards, they both have the strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, as an assistant coach, you make suggestions, whereas a head coach, you make decisions. But both of them, you're still able to try to help young people maximize their potential on and off the court. And I do love, probably the thing that I've done more than anything in my career is focus on skill development, whether it's been in high school, college, NBA, head coach, assistant, or even running the academy when I was training, getting guys ready for the draft or training people. I love to me, there's nothing better than to see a kid and work with them, and they can see themselves getting better. And that's the thing that really excites me about doing skill development, is being able to see them at one point knowing that they can do at this level, and then after you work with them, they know that they've improved. And out of that builds relationships and takes you to a whole different level.
And you've had some tremendous players come through. Most recently recently. You had Lonzo Ball at UCLA. But you go back to high school, you had Yogi Ferrell. And was it a little different? Is it a little different to take like a Lonzo Ball that comes in with such tremendous talent and to take a very young player like you had at Park Tudor High School with Yogi? Is there a difference or is it pretty much the same philosophy?
I think it's pretty much the same philosophy. I just think you, as much as, you know, that's kind of the thing when you look at the NBA or you look at a guy like Lonzo Ball, you think, oh, well, what are you going to teach them? But it's interesting that a lot of times those guys with the fantastic talent have been able to get by with just superior athleticism and or strength or jumping or whatever it might be. And so no matter what level you get them, whether it's a Lonzo Ball or if it's an NBA player or if it's a young kid, they all have areas where they can get better. Nobody's mastered the game. And so every place you go, you try to figure out what are some areas that they need to work on. And if they're receptive to that, you've got a place to work and you got a place for them to see themselves improve.
I know a thing that, of course, is extremely important to you also is your faith. Where does Jesus Christ fit into your life?
Well, out of that comes everything. That is the foundation, and without a good foundation, none of this stuff stands. And so, more than anything, whether I'm coaching basketball or no matter what I'm doing, I'm going to try to do it for the glory of God. If apart from Him, I don't have any hope eternally, and so that springs everything. I want to live my way in such a way that that honors Him, and it's because of Him that I even have this next breath.
Tell me when you first discovered that Jesus Christ was who He was, our Lord and Savior.
I actually went out to see a friend of mine who was a junior college coach. I was just a young high school coach and at Western Boone High School, and he actually shared the gospel for the first time. And I was in a place where my philosophy had always been just work harder and everything will work out. And when you get into coaching as a head coach at 22 years old and embarking in new things of life, you realize that just working hard isn't going to get it done. And that I was coming face to face with a flawed philosophy. Not that working hard isn't good, but it's not going to get you to heaven. It's not even going to get you through the day many times. And so he shared his gospel in a way that was compelling because I had known him for years, and he was one that was filled with joy, and we had fun together and things like that. And so when he shared it, that's when I prayed the prayer by myself, and then out of that, just seeing how God unfolded things, and my life's never been the same.
When you develop players, and you've not only developed players on teams, but you had a tremendous success at Champions Academy, does your faith come into view there somehow? Do you try in some way to instill? I know when you're on a campus like UCLA or Indiana University or Memphis, you maybe don't have the same opportunity, but how do you try to let your players and the people around you know what Jesus Christ means in your life?
Absolutely, and I do it over time. I'm not trying to hit a home run from the first meeting. Develop the relationship, and you know, usually there's something that'll come up at some point that'll kind of share that there is some opportunity for faith, and that's when I share, hey, I'm, you know, are you a believer? Are you a Christian? Are you, and you know, it seems like somehow there, I just look for that open door, and out of that comes an opportunity to share my faith. And even when I was doing my training, I always would open each skill session with prayer and close it with prayer. And it's interesting, doing the pre-draft camps, pre-draft workouts, they'd gone from being the big man on campus to all of a sudden they're about to enter into a man's world. And so they were, as strong as they might appear, they were a little scared, and they were open to the gospel. And so we were able to, you know, whether it was, you know, the beginning and end of every workout, we prayed. And I would just say a prayer, and it seemed to move well. And out of that became opportunities to go deeper. And at UCLA, even in a secular university, if it's student led, you have some flexibility. And just to share one story, we at UCLA we had a player named Isaac Hamilton who he was redshirting his first year, and so I would work with him after practice, and he was very strong spiritually. So we'd pray after practice, just the two of us, be the only ones in the gym, and so then he becomes eligible the next year, and so practice is over, and he says, "Hey, coach, we going to get our prayer in?" So we pray, and all of a sudden, a couple other guys say, "Hey, can we jump in?" And Coach Alford sees this happening. He says, "Hey, you can't do this." And I'm thinking, "Oh, no." And he says, "You have to open it to the whole team if you're going to pray." And so anyway, I did some research on what you can and cannot do in a state institution. As long as the players ask for it, you're allowed to. And so what happened after each practice from that year forward is one of the players would say, "Hey, Coach, can you get us one? Can we get a prayer, Coach?" And so then I would pray, and it was obviously optional and just be a short prayer, and we did it after every practice and after every game in the locker room. And then it kind of flowed from Isaac's like, "Hey, Coach, can we get a chapel?" And so then I would say, "Okay," when they would ask me, which was about every week, we'd say, "Okay, there'll be optional chapel if you want, and it's going to be over in the film room." So it couldn't be in like the locker room where players couldn't escape it. Yeah. It had to be some place where they went to that was different. And so we began with a chapel that we did, every week or every 2 weeks or something like that. Sometimes we did it on the road, but, kind of gave me a chance to really grow spiritually, because I not only was having to do scouting reports and practices and all that, but then coming up with a 15-minute chapel is sometimes harder than coming up with a 30-minute sermon. So anyway, it's interesting. If your desire is to serve God and your desire is to make Him known, He'll give you opportunities if you'll just be patient and you'll just look for them.
This year you got the Barnabas Award from FCA at the Final Four. What does that mean to you?
I'm very humbled. I don't know that I'm certainly not worthy of it. I appreciate it very much, but the fact that some people that I respect thought enough of me to give me that honor is something beyond what I would have imagined. And again, I don't know that I'm deserving of it in any sense, but I'm most grateful for it.
Yeah, and Coach Alford got it, I believe, the year before you did.
So, yeah, a couple years before, yes.
Our time is almost up. I appreciate you taking the time out here. You're in a new position, and it's a whole new realm here at Indiana University with Archie Miller. But tell me, what is a favorite verse that you might have that you want to share with us as we close today?
Gosh, there's so many to choose from, and it seems like it changes, from year to year. I have some basic ones that I really hold dearly, but I think John 10:10, that the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come, says the Lord, to give you life and life to the full, or life abundantly. I hold to that because you realize that you're in a battle, that there is an opponent, that there is a thief out there that's coming after you. But when we have Jesus, we can be victorious.
No doubt about it. That was my life verse for a long time, too, so I'm glad you shared it. Ed Schilling, the assistant basketball coach at Indiana University. Look for great things with the Hoosiers this year, and maybe we'll get a chance to do this again. I'm sure we'll be able to talk.
Thank you, Tom. Anytime.
All right. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more. So don't go away. You're listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Hope you enjoyed our time listening to Ed Schilling. I really appreciate Ed as a friend. I had a chance to text him a little bit and just send along our condolences on the loss of his father, and he was able to text me right back, and I know it's really been hard. Ed Schilling Jr. died. He's one of those thousands and thousands of deaths that have come about as a result of the COVID-19. And Ed Schilling Sr., Well, came out of Cleveland, Ohio, had a successful career at Cleveland East High School, and then played 1 year for the University of Cincinnati in 1962. That was about the time they were becoming national champs. But he made most of his mark playing for Butler, and for Butler University, did a fine job there. 1965-66, averaged 20 points a game, leading scorer and rebounder that year, and he's also in the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. So Ed Schilling Sr., our condolences to Ed Jr. on the loss of his father, Ed Sr. We hope you enjoy this show. We hope that you will check out some of the other interviews that we've done in the past. You can do that by going to our website at facetofaceradio.com. And we've got some new things up there. Hope that you'll check that out. Facetofaceradio.com. That's your landing spot if you want to find out more about how Jesus Christ is working in the sports world, and there's a lot of good things going on. Well, as we close today, I want to take you to a verse in Genesis, and this is from the New American Standard Bible, and this is kind of it was during the time of Joseph as he's talking to his brothers, but it kind of has some correlation for today. Here's the verse. Genesis 50:20 says this: "But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring it about as it is to this day, to save many people's lives." I think about the coronavirus, when I think about that verse, I think about the fact that Satan wants to use this virus to kill people, and a number of people certainly have passed away. But out of this also, we've seen a lot of good. We've seen a lot of people picking each other up. We've seen a lot of kindness. We've seen a lot of various things. And I think, once again, it's a situation where Satan wanted it for evil, but God has been able to use this for good. That's about it for us. We look forward to having you back next week. We'll have another Christian athlete. Till then, this is Tom Russ saying, remember this, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, be a good sport. Bye.
You've been listening to Face to Face with Tom Rust. For a free copy of today's program or for more information, please write to Face to Face Ministries, P.O. Box 125, Columbus, Indiana 47202. You can also find us on the web at facetofaceradio.com. Join us again next week as Tom Rust goes face to face.